Filling with the light of faith, the light of wisdom, understanding. We say the words of the invocation of Hazrat Anayat Khan towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Now take your palms and pour the blessing over and through your being, united with all the illuminated souls. So as mentioned earlier, we're reading from the Eastern Rose Garden. And if you know the rhythm of the class, there's reading, a little talking, some practice. And the subject is faith. And Mershon is so interesting the way he presents the subject, because at the beginning, he kind of explains to us what it's not. And then he gets into the idea of having faith, what a good idea it is, because if we don't, some of the pitfalls that can happen. And the class is progressive, so if you're interested, you know, stay tuned part two tomorrow, same time, same place. Again, this is from In the Eastern Rose Garden, number 7, on faith. And Murshid asks, he starts by asking questions, really in some ways. He says, when the question of faith arises, the Orthodox always think that it is their religion which is being spoken of. To have faith in a religion, in the priest or the clergy, is a certain dogma, a ceremony, principle, or in a certain form of teaching. This is what is always understood by the word faith. On the other hand, those who are intellectual and look at life from a different point of view say, faith is blind. Why should we believe blindly? So, and maybe in your own lives, you've had these questions arise, right? Do I have a faith? What is it? How do we define it? And then, oh, that's just stupid thinking. I'm just imagining something, you know. Then Murshid says, to a mystic, faith is the unique power that works through the whole of creation. It's the unique power that works through the whole of creation, the holy book of nature. It works through the whole of creation. And he says, to the mystic, he does not mean by faith a belief in a certain religion or dogma or a ceremony or book or teacher. He means trust. Yes. Trust. A trust even in the absence of reason. You know, the rational mind wants to always figure it out, right? But it can't always. There are indeed what I believe is God's manifestation. One could call it miracles, but we see that throughout history. People have done incredible things using just the power of one, but it's God's working through them that does this. This faith and trust. Yes.
You know, I've been contemplating this the last couple of months, the idea of faith. It's the idea of not being certain.
Yeah.
And whereas we want certainty,
yeah,
we read a book, what does God say? Open it up. But the idea of trust,
mm-hmm,
is so central to that, and not certainty.
Not certain. Yeah, clear mind don't know. Clear mind don't know. So Murshid goes on to say, many people possess this quality naturally, while others do not seem to possess it. We may think that one person has brought faith with him and another has not, because he has or has not that quality. But when we study life minutely, we find that there is no soul which does not possess faith. There's no soul that does not possess faith. How true it is that the Prophet, speaking of course of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, says, every soul when born is a faithful follower. It is afterwards that he or she turns to the contrary. This really means that every soul is born on earth with a simple faith. And it is only afterwards that we doubt. He's going to tell us why, too. Murshid doesn't leave you hanging, but he leaves a lot of space for interpretation, doesn't he? If it were not so, we should never have been able to learn the language we speak. Was it not learned by faith from infancy? When the mother says, this is a tree, the child says tree. When she says, this is water, the child says water. And there are many things which the parents speak of apart from ordinary everyday matters. And the child believes them as they want him to believe. This is also a little bit dangerous, isn't it? Because if we don't eventually really grow up and mature and take on our own, through experience and through self-seeking, our own ideas, we find ourselves just having inherited certain ideas and we don't know where they come. Maybe biases also, we can have that. Opinions, voting preferences, you know, it kind of goes on, right? Whether the names given to the things are right or wrong, the child takes them as his guardians wish him to take them, for that is the natural tendency. In the beginning, every soul has faith. Then how is it that we lose this quality which nature has bestowed on us? How is it? So, Murshid goes on to say, we lose it by knowledge of names and forms. As we cover up our faith with the knowledge of names and forms, calling it learning. You know, I think most of you know I'm in academia, and there's nothing worse than academicians just talking to themselves about ideas. You know what I mean, right? Those of you that know. And it's like, okay, I see your mouth moving, I hear words, but are you really listening to what you're saying? You know, it's just talking for the sake of talk. It's just a, and it's usually very cynical, if you know that, if you're involved in other, in certain levels of academia. It's very, the more cynical I am, the more intelligent I am, because I've learned things and, you know. Am I right? Those of you in academia, you know what I'm talking about. So this is also what Murshid is talking about. And then we have that beautiful quote from the Bible, don't we? About unlearning, and be ye as little children. How innocent and how awake, you know, how inquisitive, how much imagination comes into it. So Murshid says again, he, man, woman, loses faith by the knowledge of names and forms, and as he grows, he covers up his faith by knowledge of names and forms, calling it learning. At every step in his progress towards the knowledge, he compares things and considers some things better than others, saying of one thing, this is true, and of another thing, this is false. And then Murshid, this is in quotes, this is what I can believe in and rely upon, and this is what I cannot believe in and rely upon. The one thing he calls true, the other false. But in reality, neither is true or false. It is only at the beginning of knowledge that man passes through this stage. It is only at the beginning of knowledge does man pass through this stage. Later, when a person has raised himself above ordinary knowledge, he arrives at a stage when he is able to say, all that I have called true is not true, and all that I have called false is not false. He finds that whatever difference there is only a difference of comparison. This point of view is difficult and vague. This point of view is difficult and vague, and not everybody can perceive it. What do you think he's talking about? This point of view is difficult and vague, and not everyone can perceive it.
I think he's talking about, for me when I hear that, how we're taught in our society to always compare.
Okay.
And there's the place where there is not even any comparison, it's just there is this and there is this.
Yeah. Yeah, the Buddhists say, something about, and maybe Rahim, you can help me, when speaking of truth, they'll say, it is like this and it cannot be otherwise, you know, it's like, things simply are. There is an isness to things. In other places in Murshid's teachings, he talks very clearly about the success and the failure and the success. And, you know, he's very clear where he takes these polarities and he makes us see that that's not, that there's a wisdom beyond that, where there's not these necessary opposites. Nurse Salima, you were going to say something.
Is it like the empty mind?
Well, it depends on how you define empty mind. I mean, is that openness? Is that, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there a discriminating wisdom in that?
It's with no preconceived ideas or judgments or beliefs, just to be with what is.
Yeah. How can we do that? That's a real challenge, isn't it? Because we often want things our way, don't we? Yeah.
And to be childlike and have that inquisitiveness, to even look at something differently than what you're used to or set in your ways, to see and understand. Without that inquisitiveness, it doesn't exist. So I could see how it would be hard for someone to find that.
Yeah, that it's vague. It can be imperceptible. There's a subtlety to what he's telling us, isn't there, Raheem?
You know, I think an understanding that can crystallize in a lot of different levels. When you were talking about it, I was thinking, at one level, isn't that the essence of universal Sufism, that we're trying to see beyond the form of what is Judaism, or what is Islam, or what is Buddhism, or anything else, to something that is—it's not right, or yes, it is right, but yet there is some kind of understanding beyond that, that to me is part of what is behind his message to us, and that it could be vague for people.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't you think people do find comfort in having a certain structure or rules to go by? You know, just, I know that's true in the college. You know, if you give a very open project, they're so disoriented with that. It's like, well, what do you mean? What do you want? You know, it's like, well, is that right? So there's something inherent in us. Perhaps it's part of the parasympathetic part of the brain that keeps us safe, you know? If we go along with the tribe, we'll be safe, you know? But it's also contrary to creativity in some regards, I think, our spirituality. You know, our jobs here, I think, really, truly are to be our own special note. In the symphony of the divine symphony, you know, in this whole big concert, and finding that note and being that note isn't always easy. I mean, it does take a lot of courage. It takes a lot of faith.
We're afraid of our own freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, Pirvalaya used to say, have this line, it's in the alchemical wisdom cards, the trouble is people don't know what to do with their freedom. The trouble is people don't know what to do with their freedom. It's scary. Joe's on a Vipassana retreat now, you know, 10-day silence, and it's pretty routine and rigid. And the thing that the people, that, you know, and he works for the Treasury Department, so he really is one of those pocket caddy kind of guys. And, you know, and so, you know, he told him that, he said, well, I'm going on retreat, and it's like, well, what are you gonna do? And they said, I mean, nothing interests them as much as the fact that he wasn't going to talk for 10 days. Now that's so interesting, isn't it? That's the thing they fixated on. You're not gonna talk for 10 days? How are you gonna get, you know, what? It's like, that's the point. It's watching the breath. Well, what do you mean? I mean, what are you gonna do the whole time? Watch the breath. They were like totally blown away. You don't get to talk. I'm so sorry. Would you like for me to go back a little bit, those that just arrived? Yes. Yeah.
I want you to read the passage again.
Which one? The last one? Or the whole thing?
That led to the question during this conversation.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll just read that paragraph, shall I? In the beginning, every soul has faith. Then how is it that man loses this quality which nature has bestowed on him? He loses it by the knowledge of names and forms. As he grows, he covers up his faith with the knowledge of names and forms, calling that learning. At every step in his progress towards knowledge, he compares things and considers some things better than others, saying of one thing, this is true, of another, this is false. That is what I can believe in or rely upon, and that is what I cannot believe in or rely upon. The one thing he calls true, the other false, but in reality, neither is true or false. It is only at the beginning of knowledge that man passes through this stage. So it's at that beginning that we catalyze things or crystallize things. I like this person, I don't like this person. This is good, this is bad. Oh, yum, oh, ugh. You know, we do that, right? And then he says, later, when a person has raised himself above ordinary knowledge, raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. There it is in the prayer. Or raise us from the denseness of the earth. You know, when we get the big view. So he says, later, when a person raised himself above ordinary things, he arrives at a stage when he's able to say, all that I called true is not true, and all that I called false is not false. He finds that whatever difference there is only a difference of comparison. This point of view is difficult and vague, and everybody does not perceive it. So he's kind of giving us these indications of a mystical point of view. That penetrating insight. You know, there's so many teachings, like I'm thinking about, there's this whole beautiful quote about being able to penetrate through an object, to see the essence of what is versus how we're interpreting it. You know, I think that's part of it. We really interpret the world, but it's not always as, things are not as they appear. That's the quote. Things are not as they appear, nor are they otherwise. That's the Buddhist quote that relates here. Does that help it? Things are not as they appear, nor are they otherwise.
It's a koan.
It's a koan, but it's a beautiful one. I mean, that's about mind training, you know? You know, there's that great, those good books, did you all read them when you were younger, those Don Juan books? And there's that one where he's, you know, he was such a trickster. And there's this person and they're out on the desert and he sees this suffering animal like, you know, just in, you know, just like, oh my God, we've got to go help this animal. And Don Juan's like so calm about it all. It's like, oh, it's, you know, and it was a trash bag. In the wind. How many times does that? No, you see, no. Things are not as they appear, nor are they otherwise, but they're in the mind. It's training the mind. They're constructs. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Well, isn't that why we can all see the same thing, but there might be 10 different things that we're seeing? If, you know, if somebody goes to describe them.
That's true.
Yeah, and a memory is very unreliable too, and we rely on memory a lot. Isn't it interesting? It's very unreliable. Not that. Yeah.
Where does that come from?
It's from the Hindu tradition, and I think that Murshid Sam he liked that saying a lot.
I was in a Indian bookshop one time, uh-huh. And I saw this title, Neti Neti, not this, not that. And I'm like, ooh, I'm going to read this. And I opened it up and it was in Hindi.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want to know what this is.
Yeah.
I want to read this.
I bet you could find a translation of that, though, in, I mean, that's a whole practice that people do. They just go on and on. It's like a mantra, you know.
Neti Neti, not this, not that.
Mm-hmm. Shall we do practice? Okay. So there's this practice, and some people say it most, a lot, mumin. Have you heard the word mumin?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're, and you can say it in that way if you're comfortable, but in, and that's really, you know, I had the great fortune of living some of my life in the Middle East, and there, it's dialectical. I've told many of you this before, and one of the things is those, and the transliteration or the pronunciation in with a lot of the E, it's an Egyptian dialect. So we can assume that maybe some of the things that we've learned have come from that dialect. But the, in classical Arabic, it's very interesting sound because it's short. It's almost like two parts, and that it's like almost like a guttural stop. You were talking about these subtleties, Farhad, this morning when you were leading and or facilitating, whatever you want to call it. We're all facilitators, we're all leaders, and we're all followers. Murshid Inayat Khan said, I'm not the head of the Sufi movement, I'm the foot. That's a concept too, you know, thinking. So it's more like a mu, it's a stop, and then min, mu, min, mu, stopping it like here. It's a very interesting, and when you start to think about the medicine of these sounds, what's happening when we do that in the throat? Mu, it's like almost raising it from the solar plexus here, which they say is the, we could say that's the area of the Holy Spirit. So we're rising, the energy's rising, touching this Holy Ghost or Holy Spirit. Mu. Min. Mu. Min. It's interesting, isn't it? It's almost like a hiccup. So think of it that way. Shall we try it? Mm-hmm. It's a little unusual, but it's interesting to try in those more classical forms of pronunciation. So let's do that. And we'll do them in the way that Murshida Vira taught me. And she had great teachers. And she always said, you say your first 33 aloud with Ya, and the next 31st 34, and then the next 34 in a whisper, and then the last 33, so it completes the 101 of your mala silently on the breath, just feeling the quality of that wazifa. So this wazifa, what does it mean? It means the faithful. Or also the one who bestows faith upon us. And this is a kind of faith that is free from, it's absolutely pure. And it's our ability to have faith in something without being worried that we're going to be fooled or tricked or set up or, you know, because that's part of it. It's like, well, you know, if I trust this, what's going to, has the carpet going to get pulled out from under me? But this is kind of like free from that. And it gives us the ability to have that faith. And Murshid will talk about it later before the end of the class. We'll get to that. But it also, it's a kind of builds a confidence in oneself that we can have that faith. Does that make sense? It's a trust. A trust. He said that. Rahim, any question? Okay. Ya mu'min, ya mu'min, ya mu'min, ya mu'min, ya mu'min, ya mu'min, ya mu'min. Ya mu'min, 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 ya mu'min. Ya mu'min, 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 Ya mukmin, whisper. Silently, breathe in, breathe out. Any comments or questions or reflections?
Choose a path to take, even though you don't know where you're going.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and trust your own unknowing.
Yes, that's a very smart. Yeah, yeah. My grandmother, Giacalone, she'd say, "Grandmother Anne, you've heard me speak of her." She'd always say, "A bad decision's better than no decision at all." You know, and then you learn from it and you go on. You know. How great is that? I mean, you just have to have courage to do something, right? So now here comes Murshid's kind of caution to us when we fall into that, maybe one could say hopelessness or faithlessness. He says, of course, the course of human life involves so many disappointments, so many failures, so many heartaches, that no one can avoid doubting. Now, this is Murshid speaking. He understands that there are failures, that there are heartaches, that there are disappointments, and that we can't help but have some doubt. But there's the challenge, you know, there's the whole crux of it. And he said, there is a peasant saying, who is this? I love this. Remember this. He who has once burnt his tongue with hot milk tries to cool even buttermilk by blowing on it. Right? So it's like, okay, I got set up. Now everyone else is going to set me up, right? I'm going to constantly get burned. Well, what then what does happen? We're looking for the burn.
Yeah.
We're looking for the burn. So you blow on your, you get your tongue burnt and you blow on your hot milk and you even blow on your cool buttermilk. It just becomes this habit. It's very potent little saying, isn't it? When a man has been deceived by one, he distrusts 10. When he's found one person unreliable, he may perhaps consider 100 others to do so. After failing in one thing, he suspects he will fail in 1,000 things. So many things take away the natural and powerful quality which was at first present. That faith, which is the secret of the whole of creation. Faith is the secret of the whole of creation. Faith is the secret of the whole of creation. I mean, can you hear those words? Can you get, do you get it? You start to get it. The whole of, it's by faith that this happened. All of this, that each one of us happened. By faith, the whole of creation. Michael, you're not going to fall off the edge of that, are you?
No.
Are you awake?
Yeah.
Or are you just, you're kind of entering a samadhi, you know? It's like, someone's going to say something?
No, it was just one of those inner...
Oh, yeah, it is exciting.
A thought without a thought.
Yeah.
Without words.
So many things take away that natural and powerful ability which was at first present. That faith which is the secret of the whole of creation, the secret of all success that can ever be attained in life. The end. Now we can go home. Because that's pretty amazing. Just that quote alone. Shall I read it a few more times? So many things take away that natural and powerful ability which was at first present. Sort of that natural ability that Murshid was talking about in the beginning. Then how learning of names and forms takes that away. We can become cynical in our learning or in our distrust. So many things take away that natural and powerful ability which was at first present. That faith which is the secret of the whole creation, the secret of all success that can ever be attained in life. This faith is broken by life's discouraging experiences. When confidence in others is lost, then confidence in self is lost also. Have you ever had that feeling? That disappointment and the heartache? We start to doubt ourselves. And Murshid's saying that's really a call to faith. We can take it as a real blessing if we see it. You know, again, the subtlety of it. It may seem vague, but maybe there's something that needs to break open. I mean, we hear that a lot in Rumi too. You know, we break open and something else comes out. You know, shattered the ideal on the rock of truth is how Murshid says it, right? Sometimes that has to happen. We can get bigger. It's like the snake shedding their skin. Or the crab. I love the story of the crab. You know its story, right? How it grows. Do you know the story? Some of you want to know the story?
Yeah.
Okay. So the crab, the way the crab grows, I mean, you probably never think about it, but they're really little, right? And how do they get so big? And big? So they do this. And they develop different ways. Like, first of all, they're just like, when they start to grow, they're kind of just, when they first shed their shell, what they do is they crack the shell from behind, I know this because I did exhibition work in Virginia for the Science Museum. And they shimmy out of their shell, and then they hide behind the shell, which is also a very interesting metaphor. While they're very vulnerable, but they're behind that shell, so they think they're safe. And then they go through developmental stages. At first they, and this is also an interesting metaphor, they go through a paperback phase, the tin back phase, and then they go through the hard shell. That's why they call them hard shell crabs. And they go through that again and again. But you know, that idea of cracking open and then shimmying out and being really vulnerable, but hiding behind that shell, and then they start to develop this hardness again, but then that's the growth process. But it's really interesting. It's kind of a cracking open so that they can grow. And life does that to us. But then we take it and we then that becomes our whole filter for life, instead of saying, maybe this is the divine blow of the, you know, a blow of the divine hammer to help me look at things differently, or get me to my next place, or test my strength and conviction, or, you know, whatever. I mean, I love the, you know, I studied in college Michelangelo and his journals, and, you know, that whole idea that he really could witness within the block of marble what was trying to emerge before it had. But it was only, you know, the blows of a hammer and a chisel that could make that emerge. Well, what do you think we're going through every moment of our life?
Every element of life.
Yeah.
Is going through.
Everything is. The whole of creation.
The whole cosmology.
Yeah.
And faith is the, I forgot the best rest of the line. Faith is the,
oh, here? Faith is the secret of the whole creation.
I want to hear it after that.
Yeah. The secret of all success that can ever be attained in life. Because how else can we get anywhere else? I mean, we have to sometimes take those leaps of uncertainty to get... Haven't you all done that when you fell in love? Mm-hmm. Right? Oh boy, everybody, now that everybody can relate to, right? That's a leap of faith. I mean, that is a leap of faith, and it's a leap of real surrender. You know, but really, honestly, I see that, I see it even here, at the, you know, I just see that. I see this constant yearning and searching for that. We seek it in another, and it's great if you can find it, but there's even something more than that, you know. There was a hand, Guyon?
Just reflecting on that, the faith plus the hammer, you know, for myself and my experience of falling in love, and it doesn't always go, you know, it doesn't always become the fairy tale. And then in those moments, it's a very easy to then develop into distrust of that person or people. You know, I'm never going to do that again.
Right.
The thread of faith to be able to have the experience of this is hammer coming down on me so that I can grow into it, the next thing. Without faith, then it's just so easy for me anyway to go into bitterness or resentment.
It's natural.
But
it's self-protection.
It becomes so beautiful.
Yeah, it does. It allows us to be really raw, like that crab without its shell. And my mother always had a very good way of saying things. Like, I had a girlfriend that, you know, they'd gotten married, they got divorced, they got married again, and he just kind of did the same thing again. And she goes, "Don't you feel so much better now that you got lost that 250 pounds? You know what I mean? I mean, Mom just always knew how to say things, right? You know her, right? And it was like, oh my God, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Don't you just feel so much better now that you lost that 250 pounds? You know, my mom didn't mince words, you know? And she lived most of her life as a single woman, although she had many suitors, but she was just way too independent for that, you know? And that was a very interesting life to have someone that didn't feel she required that to be who she was, you know? Nor my grandmother, who had, oh my God, men just falling at her feet. They were very independent. This faith is broken by life's discouraging experiences. When confidence in others is lost, then confidence in self is lost also. And the more it's lost, the more failures one meets. Murshid says it also that way. The mind draws the line of fate, that the quote, mind draws the line of fate. So it's like, be careful what we're thinking, you know, be careful where your mind goes, what your thoughts do. And he says, whoever he sees, he suspects. Whatever he hears, he questions, whether it's right or wrong. He will doubt even his friend in business, waiting for a time to come when he can trust. But that time never comes. It's like, have you ever met people that they're just so lovable and they don't know that and they can't feel love? They can't trust that anyone's loving them. You know, just keep reminding them, you're lovable. You are lovable. Because there are people like that. I find them nearer than you can know. And I always think that's very sad, because then they just have that veil that someone's trying to trick them or set them up instead of just loving them, having genuine care for them and concern. His very doubts create doubts in the mind of the suspected person. So it's like we think that about, so how many people have I heard that story about? The person that doesn't trust their partner, and the next thing, and the partner's not doing anything, but the next thing you know, the partner is, because it's like, well, you know, it pushes the person away. Okay. That suspicion.
Yeah, it's like the self-fulfilling.
Yeah.
Because you act in such a way to create.
Yeah, and then they want it, they feel like they're not, you know, trusted and affected and have affection and, you know, that faith in them, and then they break that faith. Sorry.
Oh, it was just like the self-fulfilling prophecy.
It is. Yeah. His very doubts create doubts in the mind of the suspected person, and when the doubts come true as the effect of the doubter's thought, or at least it creates an illusion which the moment shows the picture of his doubts. You know, it's like anticipation, and then you say, oh, that's it. That happened. I thought it was going to happen. I knew it wasn't, and then it does. Right? I mean, we all are giggling because we know that is so true. We've all been there and done it, haven't we? Mm-hmm. Is there anyone that hasn't in their own way? Is there? I'd like to meet you. And I would like to you come sit in this chair. And I'll sit there and listen. If we could only develop the quality, which is called faith, about which so much is said in the scriptures, in the Bible, in the Quran, we should find what power it would carry. Again, he says, it's the secret to all success. I think I was asked one time at the college, they were going to do a display in the bookstore, and they asked some of the professors, what was your favorite childhood book? And of course, I'm old enough that some of them were created when, you know, when I was young, so mine were different than maybe some of the younger faculty. But I said, I remember my first day of school. Now, I started school really young at 4. I was very inquisitive, and that was a little problematic, so it's like, oh, let's just put her in school. So, and I was really happy when I was in school. I liked it a lot, and I guess I'm still there. I'm still going every day to school. So, but my grandmother Sabato came over, and she brought me a book and read it to me. And that book was, and it's really all about faith. Does anyone know what I'm going to say? The Little Red Engine That Could. The Little Red Engine That Could. And, you know, she gave me a little Dharma talk. I mean, she kind of had her own way. And it was kind of like, now when you feel people are trying to hold you back, or you, you know, don't think you're as good as anybody else, or you're whatever, you know, she did that, just like, just remember this little engine that could, and say, you can go, just like the little engine, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. Then it became, I know I can, I know I can, I know I can, right? What a great story. You might want to pick up a copy. There's great wisdom in those stories, yeah? So the little red engine that could. Murshida also says, don't tell people your dreams. Have you heard, not dreams like, oh, I'm sleeping and I'm dreamy, but don't necessarily share your ambitions or your aspirations, because what then can happen?
If you're sharing before it's ready, then somebody who doesn't get what you're trying to do can easily say, oh, that makes no sense, or something that,
yeah,
that causes the person to have less faith in themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or to limit
doubt.
Himself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
You disperse power.
Yes. Yeah. Murshid also teaches about keeping a secret, knowing how to keep a secret, that there's a power in that.
And if they're judging it, they're diminishing it, the energy that's in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So be careful what you share. Too much talking. You know, that's the reason they say silence is golden.
I think a lot of young people have never been able to get, or have had a hard time getting the career that they want because their parents say, you know, well, you can't live being a violinist, or you can't,
yeah,
live being a poet, but if you're an engineer, or if you're a physician or something, and they cut that dream out. Mm-hmm. And yet children have faith in their parents.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a real awkward,
yeah,
situation.
It is.
The yes, but can you make a living?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. That's also part of the generation, you know, of the parents. So keeping that faith, you know, have any of you read the book of Mother Teresa that she wrote towards the end of her life? Now St. Teresa of Calcutta. Have you read the book? Yeah, Arif. You know, she talks about kind of being in a dark night. I mean, first of all, it's very interesting how she, all the hoops that she had to go through to establish her order. I mean, she was constantly told no, 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 and she had such a driving call, she calls it the call, that she would not give up, and she kept writing letters to the Pope, you know, she went all the way up the ladder, and finally I think the way she got them was, and I think this is so powerful, and I think this is was the turning point, and Arif, maybe you remember as well, but what I got was when she said to them, wouldn't it be worth it to save just one soul? You know, and they were kind of like, yeah, she's probably right. Right? Like, oh yeah, I guess that is really our mission, you know what I mean? And I know she's been criticized, but you know, having been there and seen the work and how the community is supported and affected and, you know, spent a little bit of time there with her. You know, I can only say there's so much, much better that has come from it. And she gave people great faith and great comfort.
Do you have anything else to say about that? I mean, because after she finally said yes, 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 and then she didn't have that connection, and she didn't feel that connection anymore. Do you have any?
That was part of it. I'm thankful for that. And please, you know, chime in if you can remember anything. I guess why I really started the story, so you've really helped me, Arif, is that she went into a really place where she didn't hear anything. She felt sort of isolated. And, you know, she describes it as kind of the last 30 years of her life in a very dark, isolated place. And so, but, you know, seriously, how she kept that work up in all of that was just faith, unbelievable faith. You know, just the reminder to try to see, you know, Jesus in the face of everyone and everything. But imagine being clothed in that kind of darkness and doing the work that she was doing. I mean, she really, what that is sainthood. And when you read about the saints, so many of them went through those great trials. So, you know, you don't know, maybe that's part of your, you know, I've given talks before in the Netherlands, and part of them is, you know, really, I mean, think of what Jesus did go through for us, or any of the great beings, the sacred Muhammad too, being exiled and having to run for the fear of his life and the family. I mean, when we go through these challenging times, it's in some small way we join in that crucifixion. But it's not just crucifixion. What comes next? Resurrection. Yeah, it's a regenerative process. And to remember that and to keep the faith. And it's been a real challenging time for me taking on this new role, many of you know. And, you know, it's like I'm comforted by Pir Shabda's words, because I know he went to Taisi to Rinpoche afterwards, and it's like, I'm afraid I'm going to break it, you know? And he's like, the Dharma is indestructible. You're not going to do anything wrong, right? And so that's kind of it, just keeping that faith even in questioning and learning how to listen and not always hearing so clearly what the next step is or the direction, and having the faith even to make a wrong choice perhaps. But the owl. I walk the dogs early in the morning because I'm so silly. I kind of wear this crazy bright nightgown, and I have a big hat on, and I have a striped t-shirt over that, and I have my leggings, and it's like I look like, you know, a crazy person walking the streets with these two black dogs, and so I don't want anyone to see me, so I get up before it starts to become daylight, and I also, because one of our dogs is quite elderly and he doesn't go as fast, but I'm trying to get my steps in, so I'm kind of prancing, you know, and it's like, oh, there she is, there, crazy lady again out on the streets, but that's, so that's setting the, you know, the tone with her big floppy hat, and so then, but just at that moment when the sky starts to lighten, every morning, this owl flies over, and and it's like, remember, it is darkest before the dawn. You know, to remind, it's like a beautiful reminder. Every day that owl comes. Isn't that special?
Yeah.
And you know, in Tibetan Buddhism, there's a wrathful emanation of Shinrizik, Avalokiteshvara, that is, its companion is the owl. And so I always think that's very beautiful. And the Tibetans say that, they call it Zimmer. And Zimmer is they have what they call this life gods and next life gods. Did you know that? So this life gods are the gods you pray to help you in this life. And that life gods are the ones that you pray to accumulate merit and to help other beings. So that's kind of an interesting thing. So I learn a lot hanging out with the Tibetans.
The owl is for which one? This life or the next
life? It's this life. Ah. But then see, Avalokiteshvara Chenrezig's, of course, next life god. Mm. You accumulate your merit for your next life. Yeah, it's interesting. But he has a companion for this life.
Yeah.
Time check? Oh, it's time.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh, what to do? Well, it was the end of the class anyway, so how about that? I was going to do the practice one more time, but I think I should leave you a little bit of time to transition to your next classes. But can we reach each other and just touch hands? And it was a practice that I was going to introduce today, but since I didn't get to it, let's do it in closing. It's a prayer, it's a line from the prayer Pir, which is a secondary prayer that we do in the morning. And that prayer is, the line is, a new hope is born in my heart by breathing thy peaceful atmosphere. A new hope is born in my heart by breathing thy peaceful atmosphere. A new hope is born in my heart by breathing thy peaceful atmosphere. A new hope is born in my heart by breathing thy peaceful atmosphere. A new hope is born in my heart by breathing thy peaceful atmosphere. We ask that any merit that has been generated during our time together move out in increasing effulgent waves of love, harmony, and beauty, touching all beings, especially those most troubled, in whatever form that trouble may take, but that they might feel some measure of a new hope by breathing thy peaceful atmosphere. Amen.